Winchester Talking News for Friday, the 3rd of November, 2023. Hello, and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. It's for Thursday, the 3rd of November, 2023. And I am your presenter, Roy Faithful, and your readers today are Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings of the Winchester Talking newspaper and the Winchester Talking magazine, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. And this phone number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. If there's a problem with your Sovereign player, please try plugging it in and recharging before returning it as faulty. The main headlines this week are Shopping Centre Scores Big Name, Delight at U-Turn on Railway Ticket Offices, and Light and Sound Show Tribute. So may we have the story behind the first headline, please? Heather?
Yes. Shopping centre scores big name. A sports retailer signs for a huge unit in the Brooks. We walked past on our way from the car park to here, a huge empty space which had, I think, three shops in it, and it's all being lit up and clearly prepared for use. The Brooks Shopping Centre has scored a huge sports retailer to take over the former New Look store. The centre has announced that Sports Direct will be moving in on the lower ground floor in December. The new tenant has been signed by Yarrow Estates Limited, a consortia of investors led by Winchester developers Gentian, which bought the centre in January. Yarrow Estates expects Sports Direct will increase footfall and boost the other businesses. The popular sports retailer hopes to open in units 3 to 6 of the Brooks in December. And Dr. Paul Spencer, there's a photo of a smiling man in glasses, director of Winchester Business Improvement District, commonly known as BID, has welcomed the news. He said, "We very much look forward to welcoming Sports Direct to Winchester. This is brilliant news for the Brooks Shopping Centre and for our city retail offer." With no central sports shop in Winchester for some years, the Brooks team expects Sports Direct will be a very popular addition, particularly for athletes and sports fans in the city. Yarrow Estates Limited, a consortia of investors led by Winchester-based investors and developers Gentian, bought the shopping centre in January. Simon Turpin, director and asset manager, has been working with the Brooks management team, its tenants and Winchester City Council staff to improve the centre by securing new tenants, reducing energy wastage and improving the visitor experience. Alongside the Sports Direct deal, Yarrow Estates has concluded a number of other new lettings as well as extending existing leases. A new £100,000 high-definition CCTV system has also recently been installed. Mr. Turpin said, "We are very pleased to welcome Sports Direct back to Winchester. The Brooks is the perfect location in the city centre for them, where the large-sized unit they wanted can be provided alongside other great brands and at a much lower per square root rent and rates than on the high street. We expect to see a significant increase in footfall when they open, which will in turn benefit all our other tenants. The Brooks will soon be announcing its festive plans, including the biggest indoor Christmas tree in Winchester, local choirs singing carols, and late night opening of the shops and car park. In March, the sports retailer announced plans to focus on opening more larger stores whilst closing its smaller branches. Sports Direct plans to open on the lower ground of the Brooks in units 3 to 6 in December. The business did have a store in Winchester High Street, but that closed several years ago."
Let's have the story behind the second headline, please, Noel.
Right. Delight at U-turn on railway ticket offices. Plans to close Winchester train station's ticket office have been dropped, with many travellers welcoming the news. The government have confirmed that plans to close railway ticket offices in England have been scrapped. Transport Secretary Mark Harper said the U-turn came about as the proposals, quote, did not meet the high thresholds of serving all rail passengers. In July, industry body the Rail Delivery Group, RDG, revealed proposals which could have led to nearly all offices being shut in an effort to cut costs, with facilities only staying open at the busiest stations. News of the plans being scrapped has been welcomed by travellers at Winchester Railway Station. Mark Constable, who travelled to the station by train from Swanage, said, "I think it's a good idea. They're keeping them open. It means people will keep their jobs and customers will get better service." Noeline Mason agreed, saying that keeping the ticket offices open is a good idea. She said, "I travel a lot with my grandchildren and it makes you feel safe to know they are there. It's a nice feeling of security to have an actual person to buy tickets from rather than a machine." Alexander Ritchie said, "I think it's good. People are keeping their jobs and it's better for disabled people like me to be able to buy tickets from a person. It's a lot quicker sometimes too." Dorothy Kirkham said, "It's so much easier to speak to a real person than to mess around with all those buttons." Steve Brine, Conservative MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford, told the Chronicle, "I canvassed local opinion widely on this, and the message which was fed back diligently to ministers was clear, so I know many will be pleased with this decision. The basic facts remain, of course. Ticket offices mean a great deal to those who use them, but that is a relatively small number of people, and it's actually a falling number. What we need to watch now is where else the train companies seek to make savings, which I doubt will prove any more popular." Meon Valley MP Flick Drummond said she is thrilled with the decision. She said, "For the foreseeable future, we need humans in ticket offices at stations. One day that may change, but that day has not yet come." Danny Chambers, the Liberal Democrat parliamentary candidate for Winchester, said, "The level of concern locally has been clear. More than 600 people have signed my petition calling for these plans to be halted."
Let's have the third headline story, please, Jane.
And that is Light and Sound Show Tribute. A new sound and light show honouring remembrance has come to Winchester Cathedral. Created by artist collective Lux Muralis, who have previously displayed work in the building, the show, entitled Poppy Fields, reflects on the First and Second World Wars and looks ahead for peace. Created by lead artist and director Peter Walker, Poppy Fields consists of a series of different artworks based on the theme of remembrance. This includes a tribute to the NHS, a reflection on the second day of the Battle of the Somme, and a final piece which aims to immerse viewers in a simulated field of poppies before inviting visitors to imagine what peace could look like in the future. The show also contains music composed by Lux Muralis composer David Harper, with poetry read by Hollywood actor Eddie Redmayne. Peter told the Chronicle, "This is the fourth light show we have done here at the Cathedral, and this one is quite different as it focuses on this period of remembrance tide that we are entering right now. But it's not just reflecting on the past, although we have a strong essence of that looking back at how things have gone over the last century or so. It also looks forward as well. It looks for what we are all striving for, which is a collective desire for peace. I think that looking back and reflecting on what is going on today lets us see that is where we need to be at this point in time. Where it is different is that visitors can go through different installations which build a narrative and build a story." Peter continued, "All of the shows are different. I see them as a collection of paintings where we have painted with light and sound instead of with canvas. What we get are these collections, which we can recurate into the building and allows us to then build, in that curation of the lighting elements, an emotional journey and a story and create the space that people need to engage with themselves. Tickets for the show, which runs from Tuesday, October the 31st to Saturday, November the 4th, are still available. They cost £10 for adults, £9.25 for students, £6 for children aged 3 to 6. Children under 3 can enter for free. The tickets can be purchased on the Winchester Cathedral website or at the door. And the Cathedral will hold a remembrance service on Sunday, November the 12th. And this includes a beautiful photograph of the imagination of the cathedral inside, the enormous height of the arches in the cathedral, covered in beautiful, moving, swirling poppies, which go all round you. And there will be, of course, music going on or poetry going on in the background. It will be a very moving experience.
And that concludes the headline stories. We'll continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, Bogarum diary, first person, and editorial comment. And we'll end with items of general news. And I'll start with the death notices. Butler, Alan Charles Butler, peacefully at home, aged 83. Clarkson, John Alexander. Clarkson, peacefully in Winchester, aged 92. Elsme, Sheila Nay Wilson Elsme, aged 85. Ford, Sandra Sandy Ford of Hairstock, Winchester, peacefully aged 80, following a short illness. Gilmore, Barry Gilmore, formerly of St. Cross Filling Station, Winchester. Hilton, Clive Raymond Hilton, peacefully at home, aged 71. Longlands, Barbara Longlands, at a home in Ropley, aged 86. Lynch, nay Petty Lynch, Joanne, nay Petty Lynch, and Mertz, Anne, nay Spurway Mertz, peacefully aged 73. Painter, Alison Painter, quietly at Southampton General Hospital, aged 87. Rhodes, Brian Thomas Rhodes, peacefully at home, aged 93. Spears, Trish Spears, British Empire Medal, peacefully at home. Waters, Barbara M. Waters, peacefully. And Wiggle, Audrey Wiggle, peacefully at home, aged 97. And now Heather has got Christian comment.
Christian comment this week is by the Reverend Philip Crinks, and it's headlined Citizens of a New Kingdom. Are you a saint? You probably think you are not, but you might well be wrong. To be a saint is to be holy, but not few. To be completely holy, none of us can be that. It is not for us to be absolutely good. We acknowledge someone who is greater than us, holy, powerful, God, all just and all true. All we can do is to reflect in some way his holiness. Some people were identified in previous ages as living lives which did this very strikingly. We remember their reflections of divine holiness by giving them the title of saint. Among the first were the apostles, soon after Saint Paul. Some centuries later in our own city, St. Swithin. Charles Wesley's great hymn reminds us it is important to reflect on the holiness of those who have gone before us, members of the great cloud of witnesses which surrounds us. Our one family we dwelled in him, one church above, beneath, though now divided by the stream, the narrow stream of death. It is also important to spot holiness in our contemporaries, even if it is harder. It is certainly harder to spot it in ourselves, but we should. For every Christian reflects God's holiness in some way. We can best think of being a saint as a kind of citizenship. Not citizenship in an earthly country, but a spiritual citizenship. And this is what St. Paul says in his letter to the new Christians in Ephesus. They are now no longer strangers and aliens, but fellow citizens with the saints. Living as a citizen saint means fixing our hopes on the coming kingdom of heaven, that other country we heard of long ago, most dear to them that love her, most great to them that know. Her fortress is a faithful heart, her pride is suffering, her ways are ways of gentleness, and all her paths are peace. The ways of that kingdom will be spelled out in many churches this Sunday when the Beatitudes are read. Jesus says that saint citizens know God's blessings because they are humble and prepared for self-sacrifice. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven, he begins in Matthew 5. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are they who hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called children of God. As Christians, we are called to take up this distinctive, challenging way of life, the life of the coming kingdom. We cannot fully see it yet in our world. We can only see signs of it sometimes breaking in. But we can, each, also be the place of its breaking in a little more as we begin to live beatitude lives which glorify God's holy name. We will do this by God's grace working within us to save and redeem us, as he worked in those who have gone before. Let saints on earth in concert sing with those whose work is done, for all the servants of our King in heaven and earth are one.
Thank you. We'll continue with letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860836. The email address is news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, and the written address is the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, S0238AL. Now, there are 9 letters this week, and Noel will start.
Yes, Paul Anthony Newman says, have your say. The government has announced an overdue strategic standardisation of recycling across local authorities from 2026, giving time for industries to increase investment in waste materials processing, which saves on raw materials procurement and cumulative carbon emissions associated with both sourcing raw materials and the incineration of waste. In light of the foregoing, may we hope that all Chronicle readers feel encouraged to complete this consultation and maybe prompt others too. That's Paul Anthony Newman, Cranworth Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
And Myrna Chave writes, Stamp Appeal. I'm appealing for used postage stamps, which help me to raise funds, which I then donate to the Guide Dogs for the Blind. Recycling used postage stamps is such an easy way to raise money for the charity, and I'm always in need of all types of postage stamps, including British, foreign, and Christmas stamps. If you are able to help, I would be grateful if you could cut the stamps from their envelopes, leaving approximately 1 centimetre margin around the stamp, and send them to Guide Dog Stamps, P.O. Box 91, Virginia Water, Surrey, GU25 9AR. If you would like to contact me, my email address is stamps4, and that's the number 4, GDFTB, as in Guide Dogs for the Blind, @live.co.uk. stamps4GDFTB@live.co.uk. Thank you to everyone who has donated in the past. Your assistance in helping me to support this very worthy cause is greatly appreciated. And that's from Myrna Chave, Wedgwood Drive, Poole.
Exchange trip. Christopher Gordon, who's the former Hampshire Arts Officer and former chair of the Hampshire Sculpture Trust, writes, It was interesting to be reminded by Bruce Parker of the 1938 controversy between Winchester and Salisbury cathedrals over the latter's 13th century rediscovered stained glass being relocated. This brings to mind a much more recent exchange that points in the opposite direction. Barbara Hepworth's 1966 abstract bronze, which has added colour, it's a sculpture construction called Homage to Mondrian, and it's a crucifixion, which had previously been unhappily sited in St Ives and then Portsmouth, came to Winchester in 1997 with the encouragement of the Hepworth Estate trustees. It was beautifully and very sensitively positioned in the inner close of the cathedral, where it looked wonderful. Hepworth's son-in-law, the former director of the Tate Gallery, Alan Bonas, commented that he felt she could not have hoped for a more appropriate setting and sitting. Dean Michael Till, much to his credit, stoutly defended the work from ignorant attacks and resisted attempts by some of the locally rich and over-entitled to bribe him with donations for cathedral funds to have it removed. But after about 20 years, it somewhat mysteriously disappeared to Salisbury, allegedly reclaimed. It is now disastrously located in a corner of Salisbury's cloister, its rectangular and cruciform lines making for an insensitive, grotesque visual impact against the Gothic tracery. Hepworth's original notion of a possible Salisbury location for the third cast of her sculpture apparently had attached conditions that were not met, and there was local opposition, which is the reason it went to Portsmouth. I cannot believe the sculptor herself could remotely have condoned its current unfortunate sighting. Christopher Gordon, former Hampshire Arts Officer, former Chair of Hampshire Sculpture Trust, Corns Close, Winchester.
And Mary Lou Viljoen says, not of benefit. I was under the impression that being older brought a few benefits, not just wisdom. On applying for the free TV licence, I'm informed, sorry, you need to be on pension credit to qualify. Next, I'm informed that I'm due a tax rebate. Oh, happy days. When it arrives, it has been issued by a separate company, and they have the right to charge me £20 to do that. Today, applying for a residence parking permit, again, the body responsible for issuing them is known as Me Parking, but not the Hampshire Council. When the young man has taken all the details and it comes to paying, no, you can't pay by PayPal. No, you can't pay by cheque. No, he cannot speak to a member of the council. They are not allowed to speak to the people employing them. And no, he cannot include the photographs I sent him. Even prior to all the scamming, I refused to give out my card details to anyone. Then along comes our county council, disregarding all the basic precautions to keep your money in your own bank. Mary Lou Viljoen, Christchurch Road, Winchester.
And Ian Tate writes, Homes Support. On Wednesday, October the 18th, I attended the Winchester Planning Committee and spoke, albeit briefly, in support of the Council's Dyson Drive proposals for 8 highly sustainable new council homes. Incredibly and very disappointingly, the committee overturned the officer's recommendation and refused the application. The councillors argued that the open space in Dyson Drive was too valuable to lose, although little reference was made to the 5 acres of open space just 100 metres away off Chandler Road. Much reference was made to the council's current open space assessment, which states that there is a shortfall in St Bartholomew Ward. That may be the case when looking at an area stretching from the Andover Road to Windle and Junction 9 on the M3. However, in Abbots Barton, there is a lot of open space, both formal and informal. The 8 houses wouldn't have used up all the land, which isn't large enough to have a formal football pitch, so it could still have been used for informal play. The homes would have provided excellent accommodation for possibly 30-plus people. Contributors to your paper often criticise greedy developers for building on large gardens, Yet these planning applications invariably receive approval. Yet when the council looks to build desperately needed affordable homes on its own land, the application gets refused. I strongly argued back in 2012 that the council needed to find enough land to be able to build maybe 1,000 homes. Although I have continued to argue for this, to date my idea hasn't received traction, although Paula Ferguson, previous Housing Cabinet member, and Councillor Westwood, the current incumbent, endorsed my idea. This incredibly sad and very costly decision, probably over £100,000 costs for the failed application, needs to be looked at very critically. Councillor Westwood must consider very seriously appealing the refusal. And that was from Ian Tate, Romsey Road, Winchester.
Show generosity, writes Joan Anderson. May I publicly thank the organisers of the Hairstock and Lyttelton show for their very generous donation of £2,000 to Barney's Kitchen. This is an enterprise started last year by St Barnabas Church Week to provide a hot meal and warm space once a week to anyone who needs it in these days of high energy bills and food costs, and it has been well attended. This donation enables us to continue to provide good quality food this winter, and it is very much appreciated. So thank you to all who organised, ran stalls and attended this popular show last month. Joan Anderson, PCC Secretary, St Barnabas's Church, Week, Winchester.
And Christine Holloway writes about name regeneration after Juliana. Belgarum reminds us that the Central Winchester regeneration is no longer called Saxon Gate, Chronicle, October 26th. Juliana de la Flude was a poor medieval washerwoman who lived in that area in Upper Brook Street. In 1299, Juliana brought a court case to the King, Edward I, against the powerful men of Winchester who were blocking her access to the stream. She won. This created the legal principles still in force that common goods such as water should be kept clean for all to use. She was voted one of the top three most important historical women of Winchester by Winchester Heritage Open Days, when its theme was women. With suggestions that the development should let water from the brooks flow through the town centre again, and hopes for cleaner air resulting from less traffic, let's name the area in memory of Juliana. And this is underneath a big picture of those hoardings showing Saxon Gate, the regeneration of Central Winchester.
And it's back to Heather again.
Brendan White writes about school shame. Regarding the closure of Ampfield School, in today's world of academies, there is a total lack of support for the benefit of small schools and group teacher ratio. Special needs support for children is at the bottom of the list, and the importance of staff and the attention pupils get from smaller schools is of no importance now. The powers that be have totally lost sight of the advantages of smaller schools in favour of the large, unsustainable academies. The attention pupils can ever expect from large class numbers and large schools is of no importance to them. The way the meeting to discuss the closure of Ampfield School was run was a disgrace. The staff who worked there must have felt totally demoralised by the comments made and the attitudes that came across from the people that obviously want to close it. It was dreadful. In this day and age, we are losing experienced teachers, and we need to consider the benefits to be had from small schools over large clinical academies where a pupil is just a number and gets totally lost if they need extra support. We need to try to hang on to our small schools. I came away from the meeting thinking, well, they've already made up their mind and signed it off as not worth saving. Let's face it, the land the school's built on is probably worth a pretty penny to a developer, so enough said. They should hang their heads in shame for not trying to keep this school open and to see the benefits the school is providing. I will be interested to see how this pans out for the children and the future of the school, but think their decision has already been made, despite their very weak, pathetic comments of the closure process. An angry bystander, supporter and believer in small schools, Brenda White, Cornwall Crescent, Bitton Park, Southampton.
And that finishes the letters to the editor for this week. Thank you to all of those concerned. Now, Noel is going to read an alternative look at the news because he's got Belgarum Diary.
Yes, I've got two items. One is headlined, Eerie Sight in the Window. If you looked in one of the windows behind the former Debenham store before the scaffolding went up, you may have seen some eerie figures. Four mannequin busts were spotted looking ominous in one of the windows facing Market Lane. Presumably these have been there since the shop closed in 2021. Luckily, they don't seem to have left any milk bottles to go sour at the nearby Autumn House. The busts will probably be thrown away, but I'm sure someone would give them a new home. Art or fashion students are always looking for such props to help with their artistic creations. The Winchester High Street property, owned by Surrey County Council, has been closed since 2021 following the national chain's financial collapse. The ground floor is set to be converted into three restaurants, with Pizza Express, Nando's and Five Guys tipped to move in. The upper floors may see an expansion of the nearby Travelodge, although that has not been confirmed. And the second headline is Gate Adorned by Painted Tree. Building work has been completed on the development of the almshouses by St John's Winchester Charity in Colebrook Street. It has provided two new modern flats for the elderly population of Winchester. There were one or two moans about a new security gate and its putty grey colour. So, on the way to work, Belgarum was pleasantly surprised by the new decoration. An artist has created a colourful tree that more than softens the impact of the barrier. And there is a picture of the tree painted on, looks as if it's been painted on the glass doors. Anyway, it looks very pretty.
Now it's time for First Person, and Jane's going to read this. And who's it by this week?
This week it's by Joanna Lewis, and it is The Pain of Losing a Dog. It's been 7 weeks and 15 hours since you took your love away. So begins my version of the woeful ballad made famous by the late Sinead O'Connor. The lyrics have such resonance as I sink into my grief pit. I can go out whenever I want. I can eat my dinner in a fancy restaurant. And whilst I know that living with you, baby, was sometimes hard, nothing compares to you. Yes, dear reader, the queen of the chocolate sausage, the grand duchess of the Order of Chipolatas, has left this world. Delilah Lulu, a miniature brown and tan dachshund like no other, and a loyal, faithful companion for nearly 14 years, has passed away, and in quite dramatic circumstances. Dog bereavements never get any easier. Anyone owned by a pooch will tell you that. Grieving owners fall into two categories, those that nearly lose their marbles over their loss and vow never to have another dog again. Then there are those that nearly lose their marbles, then have to go and buy another one straight away. I fall into the first category. How could I replace that sweet soul, that pocket rock of energy, that spirit, that ferocious defender of any threat to myself, her food source, and anything edible that came to the attention of that incredibly nosy nose. In the days after we lost her, every morning you woke and cried when you realised she wasn't there. You buried your face in her blanket or climbed into her basket. A pet is life-affirming. The loss is huge. A greeting from Delilah felt as good as double cream hitting the roof of your mouth as you bite into your first scone. A cuddle was as warm as waking up in flannel pyjamas under a heavy duvet, the sun streaming in. No Renaissance painting, no Fabergé egg was as beautiful as that face, or those dwarf legs with their wrinkly Nora Batty folds of chunky chocolate fur. Everything was gloriously too big for that perfectly formed cylindrical body. ears, bark, paws, personality, and her ambition for world domination. Of course, losing a person is so much harder. You're in it for the long haul. It's a life-changing, shattering, rebuilding, rewiring, ongoing process. Be glad he lived, not sad he is gone, the boyfriend said about my father. Wise words, if hard to follow always. As a surprise, recently, he drove me to where Dad grew up, in the heart of the Welsh Mountains. A pilgrimage can be healing. You can find yourself excitedly looking at what he would have looked at. You are consoled by landscape and nature. But what can take over is the sense of looking but never finding. Recently, quite a few friends have lost someone close. We find ourselves sharing tips and mantras. One read the following at her mother's funeral. Nothing you love is lost, not really. The only things we can ever really hold on to are the ones you hold inside your heart. Jeremy Thatcher, Dragon Thatcher. Comforting words when you're ready. But never for those experiencing the worst form of grief, child bereavement. 3 books have come out, written by parents, describing their harrowing efforts to come to terms with such obscene cruelty. They never really do. But they do find a new capacity for feeling, clarity and endurance. Their stories are a testimony to the magnificence of humanity in the face of loss. Truly, love is stronger than death. Simply keeping busy, having an outward goal, or counting your blessings help with all types of loss. I was doing great until Monty Don announced his beloved dog Nell had died of cancer. They buried her in his coat next to Nigel with her favourite toys and flowers. I sobbed down the phone to Mum. You're all daft, she replied. She's absolutely right.
And it's time for the editorial comment. And Heather's going to read this.
The right decision over ticket offices. Excellent news that the proposed closure of nearly all railway ticket offices has been derailed. The proposals did not meet the high thresholds of serving passengers, said Transport Secretary Mark Harper on Tuesday. This is the right decision, but it is sad that so much unnecessary worry has been caused by so many people. To so many people, I'm so sorry, that so much worry has been caused to so many people. The offices in Winchester, Romsey and Mitchell-Dever would have been amongst those to close. And no one believed for a moment that relocating ticket office staff to platforms and concourse would modernise customer service. Modernise and worsen. It would simply have made rail travel a more stressful and difficult experience for the elderly, the disabled and the anxious. And over time, those staff on the platforms would have disappeared. The government had aimed to cut costs, but were surprised by the strength of the opposition from almost everyone. Many people pointed out that closing offices would harm the quality of life for a huge number of people, using measurements that accountants do not consider. A staggering 750,000 people responded to the public consultation, so many that the government had to listen.
Now, the lighting up time is on Friday the 3rd of November. It ends at 7:01 a.m. and begins at 4:37 p.m. And on Wednesday the 8th of November, it ends at 7:09 a.m. and begins at 4:28 p.m. Put a little notice here that the Wanston Community Cafe is held 9:30 to 12 o'clock at the Victoria Hall, Wanston Close, Sutton Scotney, SO21 3GX, on the third Wednesday of the month. There's a lovely atmosphere with coffee and homemade cakes, and all the profits are donated to a different local charity. On November the 15th, the cafe will be supporting Winchester Talking Newspaper. And we'll continue with items of general news, starting with one read by Noel.
Yes, the headline is, only a fifth of calls to the police were about crime. Just over 20% of calls made to Hampshire Police last month were actually about crime, Police and Crime Commissioner Donna Jones has revealed. In September, Hampshire Constabulary was contacted 58,025 times via 999, 101 and online reporting, but only 35,596 of those contacts were recorded as incidents, and just 13,507 were crime-related, the equivalent of 23%. The remaining 22,500 calls for service were non-police matters. Ms. Jones said these extra calls for non-police business are creating a queue for calls to be answered, not just on the 101 line, but on the 999 line as well. Many of the calls and reports police receive are for other agencies, and this creates a queue for genuine emergencies and those wishing to report a crime to get through. Unnecessarily online reports also have to be reviewed by call handling staff, which takes them away from processing crime reports and other serious incidents reported online. The statistics from September are just an example of how many calls for service police receive, which are often about matters for other agencies. In July, Hampshire Constabulary published call handling statistics from one 10-hour shift in the call control room on a Saturday night to urge communities to think before they dial 999. On that shift, call handlers answered 714 calls via the 999 emergency number. Of those calls, only 49%, 349, were genuine emergencies. Of the remaining 51%, 44 were made in error, 171 were for general inquiries or updates on existing reports, and 150 were non-emergencies that should have been reported online or on 101. Ms. Jones added, "It is vital the public know which service to contact when they need help, to ensure those who genuinely need police assistance are able to get the police response they need. The police have become a 24-hour advice service, and this is stopping them from performing their core business. Mm-hmm. Councils and other agencies have a role to play here, and I would like them to work with the constabulary to ensure the public have access to the right agency to get the right support."
And following on from our previous article, we have eye-catching display of poppies for remembrance. A Hampshire woman has helped create an eye-catching display of knitted poppies in Winchester city centre. Sue Butcher has been coordinating the displays since 2018. The poppies are on show on the railing outside Winchester Cathedral, outside Abbey House in the Broadway, and at the Hospital of St Cross. Mrs Butcher, 76, said, "We've got a few people involved, mainly from the Knit and Natter group in Sutton Scotney. We first started doing it in 2018. It's important that we remember the people who have died in the war. That includes the wars going on at the moment. Mm-hmm. We put them up on October the 16th, and they come down the week after Remembrance Day, in time for the start of the cathedral's Christmas market. The Sutton Scotney resident is the chairman of the women's section of the Winchester branch of the Royal British Legion." And there's a lovely photo of Sue Butcher, but also a beautiful photograph of all the knitted poppies up and down all along the railings outside the front of the cathedral. Hundreds and hundreds of hand-knitted poppies, all very slightly different, which makes them even more beautiful.
Scaffolding goes up at Debenham site, so this is a warning about obstruction on pavements. Scaffolding has been put up at the front of an empty Winchester department store. At the front of Debenham's, 2 weeks after scaffolding was erected at the back of the building. The work is blocking pedestrian access to the concourse, where Winchester flower stalls normally located during the street markets on Thursdays, Fridays and Saturdays. Stallholders at the market have previously expressed concerns over the scaffolding. As previously reported, Debenham's, which has been closed and empty since 2021, is to be relet to a trio of restaurants. There is a currently unconfirmed belief that the restaurant chains Five Guys, Nando's and Pizza Express, which already has a location on Bridge Street, will move on to the ground floor, but it is unconfirmed. The chains have been contacted by the Chronicle, but only a Five Guys spokesperson responded, and they said that they are not able to comment at this time.
New memorial bench to COVID victims. A new commemorative bench, remembering those who died during the COVID pandemic, has been installed in Winchester. The new bench, which offers a peaceful place to reflect in Abbey Gardens, near the entrance to the play park, has been commissioned and funded by Winchester Bereavement Support and installed with the support of Winchester City Council. Winchester Bereavement Support offers free help to bereaved adults in the city, either through home visits or telephone calls by carefully selected and trained volunteers. Representatives of the group, alongside the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Angela Clear and Councillor Martin Todd, recently gathered in the gardens for the bench's official unveiling. Chairman of Winchester Bereavement Support, Leonie Mountney, said the COVID-19 pandemic has been a very difficult time for everyone, but particularly for those who have lost loved ones, often in very difficult circumstances. Winchester Bereavement Support helped our clients to get through this time, and we feel it is important to commemorate all those who died or who have been bereaved. We are pleased to be able to donate this bench to the people of Winchester as somewhere to rest and reflect, remembering all our loved ones. Councillor Clear said, "I would like to send my thanks to the volunteers of Winchester Bereavement Support for their inspiration and their hard work, and to all those who have supported the project. The beautiful surroundings of Abbey Gardens are a wonderful setting for this lovely bench, and I hope that it will provide a peaceful and restorative space for remembrance for all residents and visitors." And there's a lovely picture of the bench, completely full with people sitting and standing round it.
Love of flowers filled life of club chairman. Winchester Flower Club says it is very sad to announce the death of Trish Spires, its previous chairman. Mrs. Spires of St. Cross had held office for a total of 22 years. During that time, she headed up teams responsible for assembling floral designs in Winchester and Salisbury cathedrals. She oversaw several anniversary dinners, the latest being the club's platinum anniversary celebration, which was held at the Gurkha Museum in 2021. Members of the club said her love of flowers filled her life and her service was very much appreciated. Her knowledge of contemporary and traditional floral design was extensive, the club said in the statement, continuing, "Her contributions to the club will be truly missed." And there is a lovely photo of Trish Spires in a wheelchair now, but still getting all around the country, pushed by her wonderful husband, John. She is here in Salisbury Cathedral, surrounded by wonderful and interesting flower displays. And she will be very well known by many people throughout the area, particularly of Winchester. She even did the flowers at my daughter's wedding.
And there's a concert in Chandler's Ford, Choir to Sing Requiem. A choir will be performing a special concert in Chandler's Ford this month. Southampton Choral Society will be singing Fauré's Requiem, Mozart's Laudate Dominium, Hear My Words, Ye People, by Parry, and Hear My Prayer by Mendelssohn, at a concert on Saturday, November the 18th. The event begins at 7:30 on Saturday, November the 18th, at Chandler's Ford Methodist Church. The choir was founded in 1943, now has more than 100 members, and it's led by musical director Andrew Hayward.
Halloween House saw delight and screams. A Winchester woman caused delight in her neighbourhood by decorating her house for Halloween. Lisa Cridland, 39, said she started the tradition of putting up spooky decorations outside her home on Thurmond Crescent approximately 4 years ago, and insists she has no plans to stop anytime soon. The mum of five told the Chronicle, "Every year I make the display bigger. Last year I got a lot of people who were interested and asked, oh, will you do it every year? And I can't see why not. I started decorating on October the 1st, and I've had loads of people interested in saying they look forward to it every year. But this year, it's all gone quite big."
Lisa said her favourite decorations from the wide-ranging display that she has put up this year is an array of dead bodies that she has outside the front of her home. She continued, "I've got more ideas for next year. People keep sending me ideas. I've got quite a large back garden, so I'm thinking of next year of expanding out the back and maybe doing a maze or something. I just hope to inspire other people to get on board and celebrate Halloween a bit more. I didn't expect for it to go this big. I'm surprised that people are this interested in my decorations." And there's a picture of the front of her house in Thurmond Crescent with a spider's web going up to the top and skeletons sitting on the bottom and a huge black spider climbing the web. It looks very thrilling.
And free bus rides on New Year's Day. Heritage Buses will be providing free rides over their traditional routes around on New Year's Day. The old King Alfred Company buses will be running on Monday, January the 1st, courtesy of the Friends of King Alfred Buses. The vehicles will be operating from the Broadway over local routes covering Wick, Hairstock, Stanmore, Oliver's Battery, Winnell, Springvale, as well as Sparsholt and Sutton Scotney. The routes will follow those operated by the King Alfred Bus Company, which went out of business in 1973. Beyond that, some visiting buses will provide additional journeys to Alresford, whilst an innovation this year will be a regular connection to and from Fareham. While Friends of King Alfred Buses organise a very big operation every year on the first Spring Bank holiday, the original King Alfred Running Day, which this year is on Monday, May the 6th, it remains a traditional going back 40 years to run the King Alfred buses on New Year's Day. A fully illustrated programme and timetable will be published shortly before the event. And this is accompanied by a photograph in Stanmore, by the looks of it, of a renovated King Alfred Leyland Panther UOU419H, a single story green coach with that sort of cream line running along by the windows, if you remember those.
Its pledge, Journalism Matters, by Lucy Fraser. Lucy Fraser is currently the Culture Secretary. It's hard to think of a time when journalism matters more than now. Brave reporters bring us daily dispatches from the front line in Ukraine, and in the past fortnight have shone the brightest possible spotlight on the horrific terrorist acts committed by Hamas. Journalism has long been the prism through which we understand the world and the events that shape it. Reporting from inside war zones, uncovering corruption through networks of sources, analysing and explaining our political landscape. Publications like the one you're reading right now, well, you're listening to right now, help to hold the people in power to account, including, of course, politicians like me. And journalism can change the course of history. As Culture Secretary, I am proud of the exceptional journalism we have in this country and the 900 news titles that make up our flourishing media scene. Local newspapers, powered by committed local reporters, copy editors, photographers and publishers, are part of the lifeblood of that industry. This week, during the News Media Association's Journalism Matters Week, I want to pay tribute to the people who dedicate their lives to news. It's become an established fact of life that when a crisis hits and a situation escalates, journalists, camera crews, photographers and producers are among those on the first plane into any danger zone. It takes bravery, courage, and a willingness to risk it all to bring us the facts. In a world increasingly defined by new technologies, the battle for attention is fierce. But the commitment to the truth is part of what gives our media an edge over the competition. Social media platforms today are awash with individuals who are happy to exchange misinformation for influence. And when those channels, for better or worse, give out megaphones to individuals indiscriminately, our media and broadcasters become one of the few places where people consistently find quality reporting grounded in facts. My priority and that of this government will always be standing right behind our media and protecting freedom of the press at every turn. That means helping our media organisations tackle the challenges of today. And to support them, we have published a draft media bill. That bill will not only level the playing field for our public service broadcasters with streaming giants, it will repeal Section 40, an arcane rule that could threaten media freedom and risk financial ruin for any publisher. To defend investigative journalism from the potential chilling effects of powerful individuals using strategic lawsuits against public participation, otherwise known as SLAPs, we have launched a new task force to explore how we end the practice for good. This group of experts will ensure that rogue individuals cannot muzzle journalists just because they have infinite resources at their disposal. And to stop journalists being abused and threatened, we've this week updated our National Action Plan for the safety of journalists to ensure that journalists in the United Kingdom can operate without worrying for their safety. To protect media organisations from some of the more harmful possibilities of artificial intelligence, in parallel to the Global AI Summit the UK government is convening this month, we've been hosting a series of round tables to hear directly from the media industry about the impact this tech could have on the way news is gathered and presented. In government, we're doing all we can to help our brilliant journalists to go about their jobs without fear or favour. But everyone has a role to play, so today let's pause to reflect on just how important our free press is. Whether you're reading this in your local paper or online, on the next page or the next link you click, you will read something you didn't know, or be exposed to a new perspective or argument. You will gain knowledge you can trust. It might spark a debate or discussion. Every single day, journalism helps to keep our democracy healthy, provide accountability where it's lacking, and acts as our first line of defence of news and misinformation. By picking up a paper, becoming a subscriber, or just tuning in, you're helping support our free press to remain free and perform the vital role in supporting and strengthening our society and democracy.
Doctor vows to fight on. After losing an employment tribunal against his former hospital bosses, a doctor has said he is not going to let this outcome be the end. Winchester maternity consultant and obstetrician of 20 years, Martin Pittman, was sacked by Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, that's HHFT, earlier this year. Mr. Pittman's complaints that he suffered a detriment due to whistleblowing, concerns over patient and staff safety, were unanimously dismissed in a judgment released on Friday, October 27th, following a two-week hearing at Southampton Magistrates Court. Despite describing the tribunal as a devastating blow, Mr. Pittman has said he's not giving up and owes it to the current and future patients of the Trust to keep fighting. Mr. Pittman, 57, from South Wanston, said, "Having devoted 4.5 years of my life to get my case to the employment tribunal stage, the verdict, as it stands, will categorically not be the end. I didn't give up that easily. I don't give up that easily. I'm pretty resilient and determined. I'm not going to let this outcome be the end. I'm stronger and better than that. With my stellar legal team's support, I need to assess whether mounting an appeal against the verdict is the appropriate next step. This is very far away from the end. The evidence presented by the Trust witnesses told its own story. I'll be very interested to see the responses from people who were there for the hearing when the verdict is in the public domain. We felt it had gone as well as it could have. I shared what I wanted to share. I told the truth about what had actually happened throughout the Trust's handling of my case. I don't think anyone has won or lost. It is quite clear, however, who has suffered most. It was very reassuring and gratifying that the tribunal confirmed that I had whistleblown significant concerns that were in the public interest. I, however, was unable to convince the panel that I had suffered detriments as a consequence of this. The tribunal panel, led by employment judge Jonathan Gray, concluded that the main reason for what happened to Mr. Pittman was because of his communication style, not because he was whistleblowing. A spokesman for HHFT said, "Although grateful that the decision has been made in our favour, we would not have wanted to find ourselves at a tribunal. The value we place on all our staff cannot be overstated. They are in the front line of providing outstanding care and clinical excellence to patients. Mr. Pittman raised important and valid concerns."
And here we have new exhibition in step with history is a shoe-in. Hampshire Cultural Trust has a new exhibition focusing on shoes coming to Winchester Arc. Shoes Inside Out features footwear from the past, dating from the 11th century to the present. The exhibition explores how shoes have shaped and been shaped by society throughout the years. From Georgian high society shoes to 1970s platforms and current high-end designer heels to everyday boots, there will be a shoe to fit all interests. Shoes Inside Out showcases historical shoes and boots from the Cultural Trust collection, with the selection having been specifically x-rayed to show the designs and workings in a new light. These are displayed alongside the corresponding shoe to uncover their construction and developments in design, or reveal an ethereal reminiscence of a life lived. Co-curator Tara McKinney Marinus said, "Highlights from the Hampshire Cultural Trust collection will be presented through a number of themes: work, play, protect, identify, empower, transform and aspire, to explore how shoes are a powerful signifier of the wearer, but also how their form and function allows us to explore broader cultural issues. The exhibition will contain more than 70 pairs of shoes, the majority of which were made in the 19th and 20th centuries, as well as several very early objects, including a bone skate from the Anglo-Saxon period, which was found in Winchester, and a child's shoe from approximately 1680. Other objects on display include a First World War officer's trench boots, early 20th century clogs and boots, galoshes, waders, calipers, riding boots and dance shoes, including a pair from C. 1925 in the flapper style and gamba ballet shoes. The second half of the 20th century is represented by 1940s to 50s utility wear, army boots, 1950s stilettos, brothel creepers and platform shoes that became synonymous with popular culture in the late 1960s and early 1970s. Visitors are encouraged to wear their favourite shoes to the exhibition, snap a photo using the Polaroid camera and add it to the shoe wall in the gallery, sharing the story behind their favourite pair of shoes. This collection of personal stories will build and remain on display for the duration of the exhibition. Shoes Inside Out is a free exhibition and opens in the gallery at the Arc on Thursday, November the 24th. It will run until Wednesday, March the 6th. And this is accompanied by a wonderful photograph of a pair of women's wedge shoes by John Galliano from the 2010s, which consist of a very high heel. They are a black shoe with no toes, but a lovely bow on the top of it, perched on an enormous, high, bright yellow wedge, 2 inches deep at the toe end, and I would say 5 inches deep at the heel end. My goodness, you wouldn't want to walk in mud in those.
Coronation oak planted in honour of King Charles. A coronation oak tree has been planted in Winchester in honour of King Charles. The tree was planted in the grounds of the Hospital of St. Cross at a small ceremony on Thursday, October the 26th. It is part of a wider landscaping plan for St. Cross. The Right Reverend Jeff Annis, Honorary Assistant Bishop, spoke to mark the occasion. He said, "We are gathered together to commemorate the coronation of His Majesty King Charles III. We give thanks for his example of selflessness and service and pray for his reign. The coronation oak is a sign of strength and hope, a reminder of our shared stewardship of the earth and its resources. Nigel Atkinson, Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, added, "This time 12 months ago we were planting trees for the Queen's green canopy to remember all the great work her late Majesty did while she was sovereign of this country. In Hampshire we've planted tens of thousands of trees." And His Majesty decided that every county should have a tree planted in his honour to remember the coronation, which was such a splendid day for so many people in this country. "It's absolutely wonderful to be planting the tree at St. Cross. A great honour for me to be able to plant this tree on behalf of the people of Winchester." To close the ceremony, the London Central Brass Trio played the national anthem. There is a photograph of five people, two of them in rather nice clerical robes. Unfortunately, the tree, which is a very young oak, you can only see its long, slender trunk and a few little leaves at the top. The photograph doesn't go high enough for us to see the canopy properly.
Good chaps have been a cut above for 30 years. A city centre barber shop where men would queue for hours for a haircut is celebrating 30 years in business this month. In October 1993, Helen Whitehouse opened Chaps of Winchester in the High Street, and this week the barber shop celebrated 3 decades in business. Lorraine Baker, 46, began working at Chaps in 1998 until Helen asked her to take over in 2006. The 46-year-old, who lives in Southampton, bought the barber shop when she turned 30 so she could raise her daughter Ella with financial independence. Over the years, Lorraine has built up a good relationship with her regulars, with many former clients bringing their sons for a haircut. She said regular always came for a flat top and often spoke highly of his wife and 2 girls. Lorraine said they bonded over their shared taste in music, and she was very upset when she learned he had passed away. Since she first started at Chaps, Lorraine has seen some significant rise in competitive barbershops across Winchester. Lorraine said there were originally 1 to 4 barbershops in the area, but now that number has now risen to include more than 20 different hairdressers in Winchester city centre alone. The staff at Chaps have always been self-employed, which has only increased the work ethic in the shop, according to Lorraine. Many of her barbers have worked at Chaps for a long time, ranging from 6 to 12 years of employment. She said, "I've been very lucky. My staff are really hard working." Like many businesses, Chaps was affected by the pandemic, with many older regulars now returning for the first time since 2020. Before COVID hit, it was a walk-in only barber shop, and Lorraine fondly remembers the long line of customers snaking along the store front on a Saturday morning. But to follow the government guidelines, Chaps had to quickly change to bookings only to stay open. Looking back, Lorraine said this reduced pressure on her staff and increased customer satisfaction, as people weren't waiting for hours to be seated. She said it took ages to bounce back. In light of these changes, she certainly believes this anniversary is a cause for celebration. She added, "It's incredible, especially considering the climate. To have a business still standing and thriving is all I can ask for."
Now, council cuts the ribbon on 9 affordable homes. Winchester City Council recently unveiled 9 new homes in North Whiteley with a ribbon-cutting ceremony. The properties are the last to be completed as part of the council scheme at the wider North Whiteley development, bringing the total number of homes that have been handed over to the local authority up to 54. The homes, built by Countryside Partnerships Limited, are part of the council's work to provide good quality, affordable homes in the district. If energy efficiency is also a factor in the design of the homes, which have been built to the Association of Environment Conscious Building Standards, meaning they'll be cheaper to run and produce less carbon emissions. The council scheme of 54 homes is part of the larger North Whiteley development, which will include 3,500 homes, 2 primary schools, a secondary school, retail and community centre, and significant highway improvements. Councillor Chris Westwood, Cabinet Member for Housing, said, "We're committed to providing homes for all. And this is accompanied by a photograph of Councillor Martin Todd and Chris Westwood outside one of the new homes, which looks like a very attractive pinkish brick building, flowers and bushes planted in front, and a grey porch and grey windows leading into the inside of the building.
City Centre Restaurant prepares for big move. A City Centre Thai restaurant is preparing to move to a larger unit across the road. Bangkok Bistro in Drury Street is taking over the former Prezzo unit directly opposite. Mif Kayum, who runs Kyoto Kitchen in Bridge Street, bought the lease after Prezzo moved out in April. And his wife, Saraya Kayum, who hails from Thailand, runs the bistro. And the plan is for the restaurant to close in its current building on Sunday, November the 12th, and move across the road to reopen a few days later. Bangkok Bistro opened in 2020 at the end of the first COVID lockdown. The move will see the capacity increase from 54 seats to around 80. Mrs. Kayum said, "I'm very attached to the place here, but this is a great opportunity. We started when there weren't many Thai restaurants in Winchester because I was missing Thai food and wanted to bring a whole range of foods here. It was just after first lockdown. This is such a lovely place and all our chefs are from Thailand. So we'll have to add a Thai touch to the new place, but it will be very rewarding when we move." The restaurant has a full team of Thai cooks led by a female head chef. And the general manager is Murat Ozgun. Mr. Kayum has just overseen Kyoto Kitchen's move from Parchment Street to Bridge Street. As well as moving the restaurant, a hotel consisting of 5 bedrooms was recently opened above it. Mr. Kayum added, "Well, at the end of the day, it's a business about getting bums on seats, and the new unit gives us that extra capacity. It's enough of an expansion to allow more guests, but keep the intimate feel. Our target is to close here on November the 20th and open across the 12th, not the... Sorry. Our target is to close here on November the 12th and open across the road a few days later. We're not doing as much here as in Bridge Street, where we really had no choice because Bridge Street House was literally falling apart. The actual condition of this building is much better, so it's just about minor alterations. We're readjusting the bar and making the kitchen a little bit bigger, and we're decorating. It's just a makeover, really. Going to be a very different feel to what we had. The former Prezzo unit currently has an olive tree in its entrance. So if you're interested in an olive tree, the owners are trying to find a new home for this one."
Bus driver among staff honoured. A Winchester man who has been a bus driver for more than 50 years was recently honoured by Stagecoach. Nick Knight is Stagecoach South's longest-serving employee, having joined its predecessor, Hanson Dorset, 51 years ago in 1972. More than 30 long-serving staff were acknowledged after accumulating an impressive 989 years of service between them. They were recognised for their prolonged hard work and commitment over the years at a celebration dinner and award ceremony at the Langstone Hotel near Havant. The evening featured a dinner followed by presentations made by Stagecoach South's managing director, Mark Reddy, who paid tribute to their great contribution. He said, "Our long service awards provide great opportunity for us to recognise the loyalty and devotion shown by many long-serving employees who have all contributed to helping us to develop and shape the company into one of the country's leading bus operators. The bus industry can require exceptional levels of commitment from those who work within it, and we so value the contribution of all our employees across the business and support from their partners and families. Stagecoach South recently won Bus Operator of the Year Award at the National Transport Awards." Mr. Reddy added, "This remarkable achievement would not have been possible without the contribution of each one of our team, and for their hard work, collaborative efforts and unwavering dedication to our customers."
Staff take on 25-mile hike. Staff from Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, HHFT, have taken on a 25-mile hike to raise money for Hampshire Hospital's charity. Starting at 8 a.m. on Saturday, October the 21st, the team of 10 walked from Winchester's Royal Hampshire County Hospital to Basingstoke and North Hampshire Hospital, crossing the finishing line after 10 hours. The group included paediatric nurses, play specialists and healthcare support workers, as well as others who in their day-to-day roles work in child health at the Basingstoke Hospital. Along the way, the group were supported by friends and family who met them at different rest points to host stretching sessions and provide tea, cake and fresh fruit. The group raised £2,000, all of which will go to the Magic Lion Appeal and will be allocated to the Child Health Services at Basingstoke and North Hampshire Hospital, with Charlie's Day Unit G2 Ward, children's outpatients, as well as the play team. Naomi Wallace, paediatric nurse at HHFT and one of the walk organisers, said, "We had such a fantastic day, despite the occasional heavy downpour. What kept us motivated was the difference we knew we were making with every step, thanks to all the generous donations. We celebrated each mile and sang along the way to keep ourselves going." Every year, Hampshire Hospital's charity aims to raise £1 million to fund equipment, refurbishments, upgrades, research and more at HHFT. The fundraiser for Hampshire Hospital's charity is still open and can be visited at justgiving.com/page/basingtoke-childhealth-walk. And this is accompanied by a photograph of 8 of the staff just about to set out on their walk in their walking boots and backpacks and warm jackets prepared for rain, with one little white fluffy dog who I think somehow won't look quite so white and fluffy by the end.
On plans for an army barracks. Developers are urging residents to give their feedback on plans to build between 750 and 1,000 homes at an army barracks near Winchester. The Littleton Village Design Statement has been updated to include residential-led proposals for Sir John Moore Barracks at Flowerdown. As part of the 4-stage consultation programme, the Defence Infrastructure Organisation, the DIO, is holding 2 community events in November for residents to have their say on its vision to create a distinctive neighbourhood for Winchester. The developers are hoping to gather feedback on their proposals and welcome further ideas on the site and how it would best fit into the community. The major scheme includes a business park, a park and ride site, and intentions to retain much of the site near Littleton as a nature reserve. However, a master plan is yet to be finalised. The army barracks does not close until 2026. The future of the open space has been a concern because the land has not been farmed for many decades, as the site has been owned by the Ministry of Defence since the Second World War, and that means it's not been affected by modern agriculture, and so contains many rare plants. The current barracks opened in 1986, when the closure of Peninsula Barracks happened in Winchester City Centre in 1985. At first, it was occupied by the Light Division, but lately it's been a base for the Army Training Regiment, the ATR. The first consultation event is on Friday, November the 10th, from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. in Littleton Millennium Memorial Hall. That's Friday, November the 10th, 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. in Littleton's Memorial Hall. And the second consultation event will be on Saturday, November the 11th, from 10 o'clock in the morning to 2 in the afternoon at the Henry Beaufort School. And at 11 o'clock in the morning, there will be a 2-minute silence there. People can also share their views by adding comments to the DOI's interactive map or completing the online survey at sirjohnmoorewinchester.co.uk/have your say is hyphenated /. I think.
Rejig. A free soft play area has been temporarily removed from a Winchester shopping centre to make room for events and a massive Christmas tree. Signs have been put up on the lower floor of the Brook Centre to tell visitors that the play equipment has been put into storage. While the signs say the soft play should be back by the end of October, director and assets manager of Yarrow Estates, Simon Turpin, has confirmed the play area will not be returning until the new year. Mr. Turpin said, "We removed the soft play area because we were holding some events in that space, and then the massive Christmas tree we've got will be going in there. But the plan is to have it back straight after the new year." The soft play area was outside the former New Look shop. Although currently empty, the units will be taken over by Sports Direct in December. Yarrow Estates Limited is a consortium of investors led by Winchester-based developers Gentian, which bought the shopping centre in July. The new owners have been busy working with the Brooks management team, its tenants and Winchester City Council to improve the centre by securing new tenants, reducing energy wastage and improving the visitor experience. Yarrow Estates has concluded a number of other new lettings, as well as extending existing leases. A new £100,000 high-definition CCTV system has also recently been installed. Play Centre Tot City closed its branch at the Brooks due to financial difficulties in April, but the unit has now been filled with a Christmas shop. The annual Christmas card shop has also opened on the lower floor last month.
And here we have Rich Town with a Rich Heart. Winchester residents have been full of praise after the city was named one of the best places to live in England for 2024. It was ranked alongside nearby towns of Alresford and Stockbridge on the Muddy Stilettos website. The Women's Lifestyle website creates a list of the best places to live every year, and it has expanded its number of entrants from 250 to 260. It draws upon its insight into the 28 most sought-after counties in England. Jeannie Isaacs, 22, described Winchester as a perfect size for a city filled with culture and entertainment. She said, "I like that it's big enough that there's stuff to do, but not too big that it feels overwhelming like London. There are also lots of really nice green spaces." John and Tina Rives, who were waiting at the bus stop with their dog Ruby, moved here a few years ago and were delighted about Winchester's ranking. Tina said, "Well, we've only lived here about 3 years, but we're still finding places we haven't seen. We absolutely love it here. Walks around the riverside are perfect for taking your dog." John added, "It's also got a fantastic bus service to take you anywhere you need to go. We rarely use the car these days." Bridges Mohan, who owns a stall at the market, said, "It's a historical city, the first capital which has been established with beautiful schools and colleges. I'm so very proud of that." "We're also near Southampton, where you can travel worldwide, and many people coming to Southampton come through Winchester for the best views. It's a rich town with a rich heart in the people." Adeola Wahab, although she was not a resident of Winchester herself, was happy to comment on its picturesque scenery and comforting environment. She said, "It's a very peaceful place to be." Jack and Jan McKnight also agreed with Winchester's ranking as one of the best places to live after coming to Winchester for years. Jan said, "We're currently stopping over on our way to Southampton, but we used to come down for the Caravan Club site. It's great for a mooch around, and it's still a lovely town to visit." On the Muddy Stilettos website, Winchester was praised for its picturesque scenery, colourful streets, and historic attractions that have continued to draw in tourists for many years. And this is accompanied by several pictures of people who had made the comments about, all with big smiles, sitting in bus stops and things. And also Bridges Mohan at his market stall, which is a market stall of really interesting fabrics, shawls, jackets made from patchwork, Indian coveralls and all sorts of unusual items of clothing, and he again has a big smile on his face.
Fossil fuel fund debate. At least £141.8 million of pension funds in Hampshire are invested in fossil fuel companies in the Amazon rainforest, Philippines, or the Russian Arctic, according to data. Hampshire County Council workers who contribute to the pension fund invest their money without knowing in companies expanding offshore oil and gas extraction, according to campaigners. Data released by Platform and Friends of the Earth has found that more than £4 billion from public pensions is being plugged into oil and £4 billion from public pensions is being plugged into oil and gas companies that are drilling new oil wells in the North Sea. The data showed Hampshire Pension Fund is one of those invested in such schemes. The data also indicated that local authorities had invested an estimated £16 billion in fossil fuels worldwide in companies including Shell, BP and Petrobras. Hampshire County Council declared a climate emergency in 2019. A spokesperson for the Hampshire Pension Fund panel and board said, "Well, the County Council administers the Hampshire Pension Fund on behalf of over 300 employers and public bodies and over 200,000 current and former staff. We, like our stakeholders, consider climate change and the issues that contribute to it as a major concern. The pension fund's responsible investment policy outlines how social, environmental and governance considerations are taken into account when assessing the financial, potential and suitability of investments."
Assemble. A team of superheroes will assemble in Winchester High Street to raise money for children in need. Spider-Man, Thor, Black Widow, Wolverine, Shazam, Iron Man and Putty Bear as the Hulk will be gathering by the Buttercross Monument for selfies, TikTok dances and competitions. The superhero lineup, led by Jacob Hodgkiss, will be outside from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. on Friday, November the 17th, as they attempt to raise at least £500. Jacob, 26, from Hairstock, said, "Children in need helped me out when I was very young. People can get involved by dressing up. It's aimed at kids, but adults can, of course, come too. If people can't make it, there'll be a QR code on social media they can use to donate." The impersonator, who works as an activities assistant at Flowerdown Care Home in Hairstock Road, has been fundraising as different characters for the past 2 years, and last year raised more than £800 for children in need. The event on Friday, November the 17th, is free to get involved with, and there'll be prizes for the best dressed. And there's a picture of Jacob and his team all dressed up as various superheroes. I think Jacob himself is dressed as Captain Hook because he's got a hook on his arm. But the rest of them all very jolly superheroes.
Sewing Day. The final public community sewing day for the Fabric of Winchester saw around 15 people making bespoke quilt blocks for the inclusion on several special memory quilts. The Ark in Jury Street hosted St John's Winchester on Sunday, October the 22nd. CEO Clive Cook said, "We're gathering people together in the local community and asking them to prepare a block for the quilt. The charity has been around for the best part of 800 to 900 years. We consider ourselves part of the fabric in Winchester, and this project is meant to reflect that. People can donate a piece of fabric, clothing or sewn quilt block to the project until Friday, November the 10th. To meet demand for the community sewing days, a final two drop-in sessions have been scheduled between 10 a.m. till 1 p.m. on Thursday, November the 9th and Friday, November the 10th, enabling individuals to finish their pieces prior to the closing date. At the Ark on Sunday, October the 22nd, Melanie Armstrong said, "I've set out four sets of leaves to represent my family. So my husband and myself and my three boys. Two of the boys have got married recently, and the third is getting married in the next 2 weeks. So each leaf represents a person. I will put each name on the leaf and I will put their marriage dates beside each leaf. We've also got a little baby coming in January, so I'm going to do a tiny little leaf with January 2024 next to it. Judith Moss said, I've chosen blue and yellow fabric to mark Ukraine. The Fabric of Winchester aims to encourage the sharing of memories, highlighting the work of the St. John's Winchester Dementia Support Service, which has provided support to more than 300 individuals living with dementia since its inception in October 2022, and the quilts will be donated to the Winchester Hospice for use by their patients. And this is accompanied by a photograph of Judith Moss holding a blue and yellow start to her quilt for Ukraine.
That concludes the extracts for the week ending the 3rd of November 2023. Thank you to our editors for choosing the extracts. Thank you to our memory stick preparation, copying and dispatch teams. And thanks to today's readers, Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening. And I hope you stay safe and well in the week ahead. When you've finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet. And please place the correct address label on the front of the wallet too. And return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you and goodbye.